Real Business Owners.
Welcome back to the Real Business Owners Podcast, guys. This is episode 28. We've got a special guest for you guys today. He's one of our Arete Syndicate brothers. He's known as the CEO lawyer. Guys, welcome Ali Awad. Cool. You guys ready to rock?
Are y'all sharing AirPods?
Yeah, man.
Sharing the same. See? We put our heads together, bro. So,
cool. So he said, video good there? Are y'all on a phone or on a laptop?
Laptop.
All right, cool.
Does it look like shit?
No, it's good, man. I was just wondering because I had the AirPods in. But before we get started, man, I just had a couple questions for you guys.
Yeah.
So when did y'all start the accounting firm?
So
4 years ago.
So I came from an accounting background. I worked for an accounting firm clear back in 2003 for a few years, and then started my first business and left that firm in 2006, started my accounting firm in 2008. I split from those partners, when was it, 2012?
Somewhere around, 2012, 2013, something like that.
Yeah, I split from those partners, man. It was just like, it just became like kind of a bad partnership. All the sales guys wanted to come work for me. All the accountants wanted to come work for me. Me and Trevor were partners on other business. So we brought that over and kind of got things rolling again for easier accounting about 2013. So
how much does social media play a role in generating clients?
It's just starting to pay off, like in this last year. You know what I mean? I've gotten all my leads in the past is just networking, going to events, finding attorneys, finding web development companies, anybody that's dealing with business owners to get them to refer their clients over to us. We'll buy lead lists from them or work out affiliate commissions or whatever we need to get those leads in. And we've got sales teams and then we've got accounting teams, and we still do it that way, but obviously we've got to evolve with the times. And so over the last couple of years we've been working on social media. Probably the first year was just a very slow trickle, and now it's really starting to compound and be a big benefit to us.
How much have you guys spent this year in total on social media?
So what happened was the very first year I did everything under I have a pretty good estimate. I would say probably 35,000, somewhere around there.
So you're
something like that. So I'm averaging about 50 cents. Right now, my budget as of today is I'm spending $3,000 a month.
Okay.
So that's $36,000 a year, right? And so I there was initially, I spent $5,000 or $6,000 a month for the first few months just to fluff it real quick, so that then when people see that I have a halfway decent following, then I've earned that extra 30 seconds for them to kind of poke around a little bit. It's just that it's getting that first like 10 or 20,000 that's the most difficult, because nobody wants to follow somebody who thinks they're a guru at 800 followers. Right. Like, who the hell's this guy with 900 followers thinking he knows what the hell he's talking about? That's when all the haters come out, like, you don't know what you're talking about, And then all of a sudden you have 50,000 followers or 10,000 or 20,000, whatever. Then you've earned a little bit of respect, and you've at least bought 30 seconds for them to kind of poke around a little bit, which actually brought my, cost per follow down a little bit. But initially, the first year, dude, we did it under Easier Accounting, under that brand, and we spent probably 30, 35,000 and only had 9,000 followers. But it was because it was tied to a brand or a company, and it just didn't feel as genuine. Anything I said, even if it was genuine, even if it came from my heart, they felt like there was an agenda behind it, because there was a logo attached to the video, and this they want to hear from people. They don't want to hear from companies or corporations anymore. When I kind of figured that out, we set up Real Business Owners less than 9 months ago. So it took me a year to get 9,000 followers under Easier Accounting. It's taken less than 9 months to get 62,000, and that's just because there wasn't a brand behind it. It was the same type of content, all of that. But people just don't want to hear from large corporations or brands anymore. It's just,
bro, that's so 100% spot on. Like in my summit, what I was teaching all these lawyers and doctors was, people don't want to follow businesses. People want to follow people. And when you say, people don't want to follow a brand, what you really mean is people don't want to follow a business brand.
Exactly.
So Easier Accounting would have been too difficult for people. Not too difficult, but not as appealing. It's like, dude, I follow this company around. Well, in 2012, I started my Ali Awad Law Instagram page. 2012. Okay. I didn't start CEO Lawyer till 2016. And in those 4 years of building up Ali Awad Law, I did more in the first 6 months with CEO Lawyer than I did with
weird, isn't it?
Yeah. But that's just how it is. Like people want to follow people and they're looking for that raw, that authenticity. You know, I even tell lawyers, like, it doesn't have to be perfect, man. Like, I have a Spanish ad that we've been working on for the past few days. And I know my Spanish wasn't perfect in the video, but I'm like, dude, just run that shit, man.
Even yeah.
People comment and say, oh, you misspelled this or you said this incorrectly. Boom, engagement. I love that shit.
Yeah, exactly. Dude, I get it all the time. If we misspell one thing on a caption, I'm like, I don't care. It shows that there's a human element to the side of it. Human error does exist. Right. And so I just keep it, post it. And then, of course, the haters come out when something's misspelled because they want to be right, you know. But, you know, at the end of the day, it's all engagement. We should probably start making that a habit where we misspell something and have all the haters.
Dude, get the engagement, I think Andy Priscilla posted about that one time. He's like, if you want
really? Yeah, I think so too.
On your post, just misspell something. If you want people to talk like crazy about your new Dave truck, crash the brakeless windows, the shatterless.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Exactly.
It's just, dude, there's so many ways to skin the cat. And I here's this one quote, because we got to get started on this. This one quote that I love is, the best marketing doesn't look like marketing.
Yep.
The best marketing doesn't look like marketing.
True.
Giving
that, dude, I talked to Dan Fleischman.
At Stueman's
event.
Yeah.
We were there last year. And he said, that's when I was starting to try to figure out what to do. And I showed him the account. And he's like, dude, take your logos off the videos. He's like, that's not shareable. Like if Allstate or something like that, or some insurance company had like their logo plastered on, even if it was a good, genuine video, you're not even going to give it the time of day because their logo's right there. So you're just, oh, that's an ad. People are just going to assume it's an ad just because your logo's on. He's like, first thing, dude, just because we had Easier Accounting logo on each one of the videos. You know, I was trying to do that for branding purposes, but it was actually hurting more than it was helping, you know?
You got to brand yourself. And then once you have a following, people are going to follow you and they're going to buy whatever you
They're going to support you.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
You got to give them good information first, man. Provide value. Everyone says it, but no one does it. And I actually spend more money putting out content that isn't ad related. I just put out valuable information like, hey, man, look, here's three things you need to know about. If you're involved in an accident, whether you hire me or anyone else, here are the rules. I'll even promote some immigration content to specific audiences. Even though I don't do immigration, I still promote it and spend money on it because it's just putting more money into that value bank.
Yeah.
And it's only a matter of time before people see it and they're like, all right, well, this is the person that I trust. And what you don't realize is it makes the client acquisition process easier because you don't have to spend as much time trying to convince them. They hire you. Instead, they seek you out. And if you play that long-term game and just try to get people to become your client next year, not today, it'll be so much easier. So everyone thinks they're going out of business in 6 months, dude, but what's going to happen if you're not?
Dude, I agree. Everybody's playing for right now and today when there's so much shit that's happening that what you're doing today will have no effect in 6 months or 12 months or 5 years from now. And anybody that's not evolving for what's going to happen out here right now are the people that are going to be left behind. I've told a couple different people, I'm like, dude, you need to get on social media. You need to get a presence and come up with like a cool name. Don't utilize your company name.
Yeah.
Eventually people will love you and they'll find out. Andy Frisella does not do anything in regards to First Form on his podcast. It's just but by default, Kel started listening to his podcast and wanted supplements. So he decided to go order First Form supplements.
They're going
to
Google you figure out what you actually do. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So, all right. You ready to rock, Dan?
Let's do it.
I mean, shit, dude. This has already been recording. Fuck.
It's
already been
good enough. Probably the best content we're going to get.
Yeah, I was just going to say, dude, I'm going to probably keep it as part of the podcast. So
we got the cameras ready, so we're good.
Yeah. Yeah, it's been recording the whole time.
Is he a buds, though?
Yeah, he sounds good. He always sounds good. He looks good, too.
Hey.
What the hell? Why the hell did you become an attorney, bro, when you could have been a supermodel, dude?
Well, you know, Calvin Klein just wasn't paying the royalties.
Yeah, they were hard to negotiate with. These insurance companies are easier to bully around than Calvin Klein.
I'll tell you what, never had a State Farm check bound.
Yeah, exactly. So, I kind of want to flip that on you a little bit, just basically what we've talked about. I mean, that was one of my first questions that I was going to ask is, you know, how social media has helped you as an individual, as a entrepreneur, as an attorney, as a brand in general. And what was it that made you kind of start steering towards social media? I think that we were a little bit later in the game in terms of us buying into the whole social media thing, and it seems like you've been doing it for quite some time. So was there a coach or mentor or somebody that you looked up to that said, hey, dude, you want to do this because it's going to mean something down the road? Or did you just kind of foresee that yourself?
So there were a couple of instances in my life where I realized I have to produce content for social media because no one else is doing it. And there's an opportune moment to build your brand and build a legitimate business without competing with everyone else. You got to understand, I'm in the personal injury space. The cost per click on some of these keywords on Google is $500 to $1,000. I can't pay that when I'm still living with a roommate and paying $300 a month in rent with $200,000 in debt, which was literally just 1.5 years ago. Actually, I'm going to have a video posting. I think we got it done, right? We're going to have a video going up where I actually recorded how my life was just 1.5 years ago. But at that time, I'd spent years building up my portfolio, my network, and really my content. So I would say there's three times in my life where I'm like, okay, this social media thing works. The first one was when I was working at my full-time first job. So I was getting paid $40,000 a year salary with a doctorate in law and a master's in business. And I'm a hustler. Like I'm in there. I'm working. You're paying me 40 grand. Like, all right, well, let me see what I can do. I got a case from Facebook that I ended up settling for $50,000. It went very easily because it was a drunk driving case with punitive damages. It was a situation where if someone is drinking and driving, you can punish them, i.e. punish their insurance company, by making them pay their full policy amount. So they paid out $50,000. That was $17,500 in attorney's fees. And I did all the work. So I'm thinking, well, I should be entitled to a little bit of that. Like I literally brought in the client. I did all of the work on the case. I hand delivered the check to her, and you didn't even give me a bonus on this case. So I'm like, all right, I should probably take this a little bit more seriously. Later that year, I signed up a case with, or it might have been next year when I first started my practice. I signed up a case through Snapchat. Someone messaged me and was like, hey man, you know, my friend got in a car accident and I think you'll be able to help them. Well, it was a difficult case, but fast forward about 13 months and I settled it for $125,000. Mm. So settling six figures worth of cases through just Snapchat with just free content is not something that has happened before in my industry. And finally, I was at this event. This was actually the moment I realized I need to get into personal injury. Like, I've been an entrepreneur my whole life. I started at age 5 just hustling Dragon Ball Z pictures because my dad had a color printer back in 1995. So we lived in a factory town called Dalton, Georgia. I would go home and just Google search Dragon Ball Z character, and we would just cut off the URL.
That little description.
The URL at the bottom, because no one really knew what the internet was at that time, especially not pre-K children and kindergartners, right?
Yeah.
So I was selling these pictures for $1 a piece. If it was black and white, $2 for color. I don't know if we were even making money because ink was probably very expensive at that time, but I didn't care because I was making money. So,
well, your parents probably took care of the ink, so your overhead was nothing. You know, their overhead was something.
I don't know. I think it was just a company printer that he was using, so it might have been covered. I don't know how legal that was. Anyway,
yeah, exactly.
So that's what I started. And then in like third grade, I remember specifically, I sold 5 of these Yu-Gi-Oh trading cards for $100. It was the first $100 I ever made. I was 8 years old. I grabbed that $100 and put it in my pocket from like fifth period all the way until I rode the bus home and went into my room to open it up. Like, I had kept my hand in my pocket the whole time. And like, it seems like I'm just telling you a bunch of stories about money, but we grew up so freaking poor. Like, it was normal to have cockroaches in the house. It was normal for lights to get cut off. It was normal to have water issues. It was normal for the car to break down and you got to figure out a way to make it to school. Free lunches, buses, like public system, the whole nine, right? That's just how it was growing up. And it was like that for a very long time because my dad didn't become a citizen until literally just about 2 years ago. So it was a lot of struggle for us. And with 6 kids in the house, you better believe like we were eating a lot and we had to figure out a way to maintain. So I had to figure out early on how to make some money. I started working in my dad's mechanic shop, was, you know, selling tires, got into the car audio business. That's when I really started seeing the power of the internet. I was about 13 years old when I made my first 10 grand in 1 week just selling online.
Damn.
I was buying car audio subwoofers from one place and then selling them in another place, all online. So I didn't even have to touch the merchandise. I got even better at it and then decided, all right, well, I want to start my own wholesale company at age 17. That went down the toilet because it was a lot more difficult to get people to buy from you when you have no facial hair and you can like reach the gap.
On the internet, you can at least hide. They don't know who they're purchasing or like, who they're supporting.
I had this baby face issue for a long time. So fast forward to the point where I was like 23 or 24. I was at this event with lawyers, and I'm still trying to figure out what I want to do in my life. I didn't even know I wanted to be a lawyer. I was just in law school because I was good at school. I just don't want to be broke the rest of my life. Like, So I was at this event, and this small guy, this dude, this black guy with an afro and a big smile. He kind of looked like Eddie Murphy. He walked up, and, you know, got his big old smile, talking, you know, he's presenting about his case that he was working on. And so I'm in law school, and I'm thinking like I'm the hottest shit since sliced bread because I'm just so smart. I got my doctorate and my master's in business. I'm published author. Like, dude, can't touch me.
Yeah.
This dude walks up and starts explaining this case that he just finalized. He got this verdict. He was talking about how it was very important and how he touched on all these emotional factors in front of the jury and how it ended up with a good result. So someone raised their hand at the end of it. It's like, hey, what was the verdict on this case? It's like, oh, $7 million. And I'm sitting here thinking, all right, $7 million, 40%. You just made
30%.
You made $2.8 million. This is a litigation case. You made $2.8 million on this one case. My entire family and our entire generation hasn't seen that much.
Yeah.
You did it in one case. And I'm like, this has my attention. And then he went on to say, well, you know, it was in a difficult county, you know, because we had this a similar case in another county just 2 months ago, and we had it resulted for $20 million. I'm thinking, you made $8 million. And, like, that's when I realized, number one, you should never judge someone by the way they look. Number two, you really don't know what you don't know. And if you really think, number three, if you really think that you're the smartest person in the room, either you're in the wrong room or you're the dumbest person in the room.
Yeah.
So I got humbled really quickly and realized if I want to get into an industry that, because he didn't talk about the money at all. That's a crazy thing. He talked about the impact that he had on the family and the value that he gave to them. And yes, he got.
And then somebody asked the question about the money.
Exactly.
And that's when it came out. Yeah.
So I'm like, man, there's a world outside of just making money. So when I got into the personal injury business and started practicing it, I realized, man, there's a lot of upside to this business. So it's worth my time investment because I can change the trajectory of my entire family. I can make the Awad name from this point on be associated with something bigger than just a couple of Arab immigrant hustlers selling car audio and tires. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I don't think there's anything wrong with that because my two of my brothers are still running those businesses and now they've become 7- and 8-figure companies.
Yeah.
That's just not what I wanted to be for the rest of my life.
Yeah, sure.
So social media came in. I started Instagram in 2012, started just putting out videos. I made that one sale, that one client through Snapchat for $125,000. I realized, all right, if I want to take this seriously, I got to go all in. That's when I made a commitment last year. So in 2018, I made a commitment to try to produce content every single day, no matter what. Because you really never know when someone is watching.
Yep.
Last year, I spent $6,698 in ads. And I generated $3.2 million in revenue for my firm. Wow. And at that point, I realized this is something that's easily scalable. It's just, you know, social media.
More money.
Yeah.
Turn
social
it up.
Social media is fire and content is gasoline. So you got the platform. You just got to keep pouring some more content over the fire. So that was a very long answer to your question, but there were just so
many. Dude, I liked it. No, it was really good.
Social media was just, it was a slap in the face. Like, man, if you're not trying to produce content or at least engaging with, even if you don't have content to produce, you don't have anything to share, at least comment back on other people. Comment back and engage with other people's stuff that you want to be associated with. Eventually, you'll catch their attention and they'll start reaching out to you or commenting back on your stuff, or they might even follow you. And now all of a sudden, you've got the attention of some important people. I promise you, anytime someone does an event or they want to post something online, some sort of giveaway, and you engage with it every single time, they're going to remember your name. I know at least four people
that I do too
that engage with my stuff all the time, and they've never been a client of mine, but I always want to show my appreciation to them.
Exactly.
And it's that's I think that's powerful, man.
You remember profile pictures and the name, and eventually, even if it's somebody that has a million or 2 million, eventually they're going to start seeing it if you're commenting on every single one. Too many people want to comment one time, and if they don't get like that like or that comment back, they're just kind of down and out. Like, dude, you've got to stay in front of people. I did a Instagram story today. Just this morning before I left my house, because sometimes, you know, I have a minute and I'll see who's following me, you know, any of the new followers, and just check out their profile, get an idea of the type of people that are following the account, you know. And one this morning was a real estate agent, and I look at their profile. It's just full of houses. Like, if I wanted to look at houses, I could go to Zillow.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, and people that detail cars. It's just a bunch of pictures of clean cars. Like, anybody can clean a car. Anybody can go take a real estate course for 4 weeks and sell a house. Like, the only thing that's unique or different is you. You are that, like, if people like you,
yeah,
they will support you. And I said, I did that video and I said, you guys need to show more of your face and show more of your personality, because people want to support people. I don't see any person on your profile. It's just houses.
Yeah.
Like, it blows my mind that people aren't grasping the concept of social media. It's not just there to show. If you sell cars, don't just take pictures of the cars. Go like this and turn the camera on yourself and say, man, this car is awesome and here's why it's so great. Or if you detail cars, I use the best product. It's all organic. So if you're worried about your animals or your kids or this is the product I use. It's top of the line, you know. Talk about the products that you use. Talk about why you use them. Talk about your passion and why you got into the industry that you got into, so that people could feel you and how genuine you are and how much you care about detailing cars and selling houses or whatever it is that you do. And you've done an amazing job yourself of showing people who you are. And by showing up every single day, producing great content, giving value to other people, in some cases value that doesn't ultimately even benefit you. That's what people need to understand is they're forgetting that everybody wants to get off of social media. You got to understand, in order to get, you've got to give.
And sometimes you got to do it for a very long time.
Long time.
Anything.
Exactly. So we originally, you know, hired a videographer because we went to a Gary Vee event, right? And we did a little business with Vayner Sports and had an athlete. He actually went to Georgia. Was it Georgia or Georgia Tech? He's in Georgia.
Derek Morgan, Tennessee Titans,
but he went to Georgia or whatever. And so we paid him to make a promo video for Easier Accounting, and we flew out to one of Gary's events. And he said, peel off some money. Hire a videographer. Start putting out content. Yeah. I'm telling you guys, it'll be worth it. And at first, you have a videographer and you kind of stare at each other like, what the hell do I do? Like, what do I talk about? What do I, you know?
I'm going to speak now, and you need to make it look good.
Yeah. Like, do whatever you do.
Yeah.
You know, make my arms look bigger. Make me look a little more attractive and cooler, you know, or whatever. But no, it was super awkward at first. You know, it's never comfortable doing something for the first time, and that's what people need to understand. You know, you've completely done something different inside of your industry in terms of an injury attorney. We're doing something completely different in terms of accounting. Like, we wanted to attract real business owners. So what did we name our account? Exactly what we were looking for, right? And so people need to find the right angle rather than just, you know, I sell houses. Here's all these cool houses, you know, and you've done an incredible job of that. And we appreciate you coming on and talking to us and feeding us full of all the nuggets that you have in terms of the success that you've seen. Would you credit the majority of your success to social media and creating content in terms of being one, known, and secondly, acquiring clients or customers? Or do you kind of have a hybrid where you have more of a traditional and social media, or what's your marketing game plan there?
So I would attribute most of my success to my upbringing and my sales background and I would say business savviness, because you really can't teach hungry. And this is a quote that I stole from, you know, this really famous lawyer in the U.S., same in the personal injury space.
Yeah.
Most wildly successful people are not straight line. They have one skill and that's it. They usually have a ton of different skills and then they hone in on one of them. I think what the problem that a lot of young people do is they try to jump for the money way too quickly. And
I think so
they don't
too.
Spend enough time building up their skill set. And so if people know me because I'm a lawyer and because I create content on Instagram, what you probably don't know is that I ran a graphics company for 7 years. What you probably don't know is that I actually took over an airbrush store overnight because the person that we had in place decided to, you know, go crazy on drugs, never showed up. We were paying rent. We had this deal with him where he would be the painter, the airbrusher. We would pay for his rent and we would split the profits at the end of the month. He didn't show up. I spent the entire night practicing. I was still in high school. I think I was in college. I spent the whole night practicing airbrushing. The next morning, I was taking in orders and just painting away. The next morning. What a lot of people don't know is that in middle school, when my mom had to pick me up, I couldn't take the bus home in middle school because school was out at 3:30. And in order for me to ship this Audiobahn amplifier to Germany that I sold on eBay for $882 that I bought refurbished from this one company for $400, I got to be home by 4 o'clock so I can have time to wrap it up, take it to the post office down the street before they close at 4:58. I was doing that in middle school. You know, so there's, dude. I can go on and on. I can go on.
Here's what's,
I was selling cars in law school. I was teaching my friends how to sell cars in law school. I remember it's Chrysler 300. I bought it for $17,000, never even got to drive it. I just bought it on eBay, parked it in the back of my brother's shop, put it on Craigslist and sold it for 22, made $5,000 so I could pay for my next semester and my books to finish up law school. So it wasn't just social media. I promise you, if there was no Instagram or Facebook or Snap or LinkedIn or Messenger or podcast, I'd still be out here doing my thing. But
still be hustling.
You find the path of least resistance and you find an opportunity where it's uncharted territory, it's very low barrier to entry, and it's different. When everyone zigs, you zag. It's just different. You know, that's where you're going to find something special. So I'm sure it's the same with you guys. I'm sure you guys weren't just accountants and that's it. You have such a diverse background and people probably only know you from the Real Business Owners page. People only know Andy Frisella from First Form. People, you know, but they're going to see more and more of him. And the more opportunities you have to brand yourself and to network with people and learn from other people, I think your brand is just going to keep growing and growing and growing. And that's really where we are right now, man. We're just
Totally, man. We've talked about this in previous episodes, man. Like, you can't teach the hunger. I mean, we've talked about the same stuff in a little different terminology. Like, you know, just can't teach people to really want it, you know? And so that's what we look for when we hire people, especially in our sales positions. But you know what's sad, dude, is I just had this conversation with someone the other day because my very first hustle was selling penny candies, not candles.
Yeah.
In elementary school, man, I'd like, when they were really a penny, I'd put 10 of them in a bag and sell them to school for a dollar. I'm like 10 times in my money, you know? And Trevor was doing the same thing. You know, like, we've talked about these stories, but what's sad is I was talking to someone the other day about these childhood hustles, and it's like schools are shutting them down. You're not allowed to sell things at elementary school anymore, and you're not allowed to do some of these things that we did when we were coming up. Guys like you and I and Trev, dude, they're taking it away from kids to be able to sell at school, and I don't really understand that. It's kind of sad to me, you know.
Whoever told you that is probably just giving you excuses, because you know that when they were selling candy and they had those $1 candies and you have 50 of them in that one chocolate box, you weren't allowed to go buy candy from Sam's Club or Costco and then sell it at school. You weren't allowed to do that.
Yeah.
But we still do that shit.
Yeah.
The school wants to sell the candy. Exactly. They want the revenue. And they know candy's being sold.
What's my reward for making you $7,000 in sales? Oh, you're going to give me a fucking bracelet? the hell out of here.
No, it's a pizza party. They get a pizza party with a bunch of, what, $5 Little Caesars pizzas.
Maybe it was against the rules back then. I don't remember it being against the rules. I did that all year one year, you know? So when I heard recently that the schools were shutting it down, they were taking stuff away that kids were selling, I was like, man, you're just crushing the entrepreneurial spirit, man, because that's where the want, the drive, the hunger, I think, is created. Like, it's in you when you're like that kid out hustling on the playground. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It's exactly.
If you need it. If you really need the money and you really, man, my mom once kicked my ass because I bought a 20-ounce Coke for 99 cents when she told me that I can get a 2-liter for 59 cents. So she made me go back to the green spot, which is the little convenience store at the corner, and try to return it. But because I was trying to run away from my mom for her not beating me up, it was all fizzy by the time I got back, and they wouldn't return it. So I came back and got another beating.
Yeah,
when
you
get your ass beat over 40 cents, it's just a different lifestyle. The bigger problem that I see is this sense of entitlement. Like, you deserve something just because you're a fantastic human being. Dude, no one hands you anything in this life.
Nothing.
Unless you inherit it and you're from old money. That's really one of my biggest fears, man, is like, I hope, you know, inshallah, at some point I have children and I, you know, start a family and do all that great stuff. I don't want kids to just be full, man. Like, I want to be a little hungry. And so, you know, if you're going to be in that private school, you better be hustling some damn Burberry jackets or something.
Something. that parents got money. So, you know, you know, when kids are bugging parents, they're going to say, all right, here you go. Shut up. You know, here's your 20 bucks or 100 bucks. But.
Yeah.
I mean, back to that point, I mean, like, dude, I grew up really, really poor as well. You know, lights being shut off and watching my mom cry to the utility department. Hey, I'll pay you 50 bucks on Friday. Just please turn the lights back on so that we can have our utilities. And so I knew for a fact as a young kid, I could never go to my mom and ask for $5 or 10 bucks. It just wasn't there. I already knew that we were barely scraping by. People would knock on our door and run away, and we'd open the door and there'd be food. Because everybody knew how poor we were, right? Powdered milk, you know, where it's like a scoop of protein with water. So that's how we had to make our milk, you know, and then pour it on our cereal. You better know how to mix it good, or else you're going to hit that dry clump in the back of your throat.
Yeah, hey.
Almost die.
You can't teach.
You know?
You can't teach that.
You can't teach that. You know, I can now because I'm an expert. But they've actually made those the protein shakers, so people don't have to die with a dry clump anymore. But But dude, when I wanted to, when my buddies were out riding their bikes or whatever, and my tire popped, I couldn't go to my parents and ask for $5 or $10 to get a new tube. You know, I had to go get the lawnmower out, go around the neighborhood, knock on doors, and say, "Hey, can I mow your lawn for $5?"
Exactly.
Or I'd go to the local golf course and start digging in the bushes and find golf balls, put them in a backpack, and when somebody was about to tee off, I'd pop out of the bush, four for a dollar. You know, in terms of like. There's always a way to generate money. And I'd make $20 on a Saturday. And I always tell people, like, if they say they don't have money, that's because whatever they want to spend the money on, it doesn't mean as much to them. Because if it actually really means something, I'm watching all my dudes ride around on bikes and my tubes popped. That means a lot to me. I want to be with my friends.
Exactly.
So I'm going to figure out a way to get with my friends, you know? So the reality is you can find an excuse and buy your way out of not getting that thing done. But that's just because you didn't want that thing bad enough. That's really what it comes down to.
Necessity breeds innovation. If you really desperately need something and you have no other way to get it, you're going to figure it out. You're going to figure it out. Yeah. And problem is we just
let me ask you this.
Too much, man.
Let me ask you this. I mean, the reality is we could sit here and talk about all the great things that we've done when we were little and how we've hustled and I know personally, and I know Kel as well, you know, there's many times where, you know, you get stressed out and you go through struggles as you're trying to build things and you want to move to Hawaii and, you know, pick freaking coconuts or whatever. Like, how many times, whether it was through school or in business, have you, I mean, I'm not, obviously you haven't quit because you're where you are, but I just want people to understand and know that going through those thoughts and reconciling, like, man, is this all going to be worth it? Is this, you know, those lonely nights when you're shutting down and nobody else is in the office and you're grinding, wondering if it's all going to be worth it? How many times throughout school or, you know, starting your businesses have you thought about, you know, quitting and walking away from it all?
So do you want a bullshit answer or you want the raw truth?
I want the truth, dude. I just want the, you know. But, dude, there's many times where, I mean, we make really good money. We have five businesses, and some days it's, dude, there's a lot of, every level that we get to, this year we should break over $10 million in revenue.
That's amazing.
And it doesn't get any easier. It gets more difficult.
Yeah, sometimes you have these pictures of like, oh, just get this, this, and this done, and then it's going to be clear sailing. And it's like, dude, there's a whole another set of workload problems, that you're taking on, you know? And it's like, you feel like things are going to get lighter and easier, and they don't. They just get busier and harder, man. Yeah. So, but yeah, dude, we want your bullshit answers. So, real business owners, be real.
So look, man, I'm sure anyone that you ask this question is like, oh man, there's so many times where I just really wanted to give up, and I had this one memory that really, you know, made me want to push and pursue and persevere, and then I realized finally, like, oh, I finally made it. I'm going to tell you a completely different story. I'm going to tell you about the time that I did quit, and that it was the best decision that I could have made. So while I was in law school, I was still working at my car audio and wheel business called Joker's Audio. I'll tell you what ended up happening with it at the end. And at 2 a.m., like, I'm studying for my contracts exam, or it was civil procedure. I forgot which class it was. And at 2 a.m., I get this call from this guy whose the wheel fell off of his car, and he rolled into a ditch. And it's because I had a stupid ass installer that didn't tighten the bolts when he sold the wheels to the guy.
Damn.
I can get into all the technicalities of how many things went wrong, but bottom line is it's 2 a.m. I'm getting this call from someone that could have possibly died and decided to sue me and pursue some sort of legal action. My entire career could have been decimated at that point. And I decided, is this really the type of work that I want to be doing for the rest of my life? And when I sat there and really thought about it, I realized that I didn't have a passion for the car audio and the wheels. I was just really good at it. Like, I memorized the Red Book. I can tell you every single bolt pattern and every single specification of wheels for every vehicle that exists in the United States by memory. That's not because it was fun. That's just because I was good at it. I knew that I needed to memorize things in order to be able to be a better salesman. But at that point, at 2 a.m., I remember calling my brother and just saying, dude, I quit. I don't want to do this anymore. You can have business. You can have it was hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of inventory, great contracts in place, a good brand that we had built over many years. I want to wash my hands clean with it. I said, look, I'm willing to go in a completely different direction. And this was in maybe 2013, so about 6 years ago. And I said, I don't want to deal with that business anymore. I'm going to go in a completely different direction and really see if there's potential with this law degree. You know, sometimes people get too obsessed with their business model and their plan and think that it can't fail. Well, most successful people have failed, if not all, at some point.
Mm-hmm.
They've
failed. Oh, yeah.
And sometimes that failure, sometimes that quitting and realizing when it's time to stop is the best thing that you can do for your mind and for your business and for your family. So I realized I didn't have a passion for it. It wasn't something that I wanted to do for the rest of my life. And that's why quitting actually made sense. I'm a very passionate person, and I never quit. Never. Mm-hmm. But that one time I did. And that was the best decision that I could have made. And that's what allowed me to just kind of let go. A lot of people hold on to criticism from their family or their friends or cultural nuances or generational biases. Hey, well, if you're from India, then you have to be a doctor, lawyer, or accountant, or, you know, if you're Arab, then you have to own a gas station. Or if you're, you know, they have all of these sort of
the stereotypes. You've got to kind of fit the mold.
Exactly. Yeah. And hey, being a lawyer is a great career, but I was more concerned with doing something that I actually wanted to do. I wanted to get paid. Yeah. I didn't want to be broke. And that business was making good money, but the money just wasn't enough for my sanity. And the moment I quit and just let it go, I could focus more on my law degree and on my future career. And if I wouldn't have made that decision, then I promise you the CEO Lawyer brand would have never been created. I would have still held on to those couple of sales here and there, you know, because I was selling wheels on Craigslist, on eBay. I was shipping stuff all over the world. I still have all of these contacts with manufacturing facilities. I mean, I made a brand in China. Like, I created my own car audio brand in China, drew out the specifications for what size cone we should have, what size magnet the speaker should have, you know, whether it should be single voice coil or dual voice coil. Like, I was so deep into that game And you got to understand that was my entire life's work up until that point. And when you're into something 6, 7, 8, 10 years and just being real with yourself and saying, man, should I quit and do something else? I think it's an important conversation to have with yourself. And I was just really happy I did quit. And
dude, that takes a lot of courage, man. Yeah, like, dude, it's tough, man. Like sometimes people do got to take, you know, a couple steps back to take five forward, and they're just not willing to do it because it takes a lot of courage to give up all that revenue and that comfort and, you know, all the hard work and even mentally and emotionally, like you've put so much into it. It's so hard to walk away from it, but sometimes it is the right thing to do if your heart just doesn't align with it. So dude, that takes a lot of courage, man, for sure.
I'm happy I did it though. I'm happy I did it because I would have still been holding on to that business, would have still been holding on to those clients. And then just, you know, because I would get calls all the time. Hey, man, look, I'm no longer in this business for shit. You want to know some shit? Last night, look, it's 2019. Last night, I was on the phone with a company out in California that had an outstanding invoice for $16,000 for something that was some bullshit because I signed a personal guarantee back in 2012 when I was still in the car audio business. So he's like, they filed a lawsuit against me. And I'm like, shit, I'm getting sued and I'm a lawyer? He had a personal guarantee. He did it right. So I'm like, look, man, instead of flying out to California and hiring a lawyer and going through all of this, let me put a price tag on my time and my mental space.
Yeah.
I got his contact information, picked up the phone, you know, and within 25 minutes, I negotiated it down from 16 to 7,000. I'm just going to pay the bill and move on.
Just pay it, be done with it, and wash it.
So, hey, I'm still still paying for mistakes that I made 7 years ago.
Yeah. Oh, yeah,
I wasn't planning on sharing this with anyone. I don't even think my family knows what's going on. It's something that I have to deal with. But sometimes just cutting loose doesn't mean that you're going to be completely free. There's always going to be, and Ryan Stuman does a great job of this, calling it the force of average. Always wants to creep up on you and pull you back down. But
totally, man.
I promise you, if you make the decision, the conscious decision to let go and say, I don't want to deal with this ever again, and no matter what happens, I'm not going back to it, that's the only way you're going to free yourself and pursue something that's actually great.
How did you know, dude? Like, what was the moment besides the 2 a.m.? Like, how did you know, like, all right, this is not for me. I love this other stuff. I mean, were you already dabbling with law quite a bit and you just knew you were more passionate about it? Or
I was in law school. I had no idea I wanted to do personal injury. I was still probably in the process of getting published as an immigration lawyer or on an immigration law issue. I was pursuing my MBA at the same time because I thought I wanted to be a business lawyer. I had no idea what I wanted to do with a law degree. I just knew that Georgia State is the best value law school in the country. And if I can figure out a way to hustle and make money and pay for my tuition as I go through law school and end up with a really fancy piece of paper that qualifies me to get into businesses that most people can't get into, it's worth it. That's all I knew about it. I knew the barrier entry was high enough to where I'm not going to see many people like me in this space. They're all old white dudes, man. You're not going to see any Arabs on billboards in Atlanta. It's all old white dudes, man. And I wanted to be something different.
I think that's – that right there, though, that's the change that's happening because all of those old white dudes are going to retire within the next 10 years. But who's coming up? Somebody's going to have to sit on the throne, right? Somebody's going to have to own that space.
It's going
to
be a bunch of small thrones. Instead of massive industries that own the entire space where you can name the five biggest companies in the world, there's just going to be hundreds and thousands of very successful people, not wildly successful, but very successful, 800 and 900 companies. But to answer your question, bro, my biggest issue with my car audio business was scalability. I've always been obsessed with this idea of being able to work from anywhere in the world and being able to travel while making money. And I got this travel bug when I was 18 or 19. I did my first study abroad trip in China. I lived in China for the summer of 2010 and 2011. Lived in Mexico the summer of 2012, studied abroad in Brazil in 2013, and then again in Turkey in 2015 while I was pursuing, you know, all these other, you know, degrees. That's when I realized, man, when you travel, it really opens your eyes to how other people are living and what opportunities could come that you could bring to your own local community. And as I was traveling, this whole laptop millionaire lifestyle thing, man, I had that idea way before it became cool. You know?
Yeah, for sure.
So my issue was scalability. I couldn't make money unless I was in the store because I was the best salesman. You can't expect anyone else to memorize every single wheel configuration out there. And if they did, guess what? They're probably going to open up their own store. So my issue was scalability. I needed a business that I could actually put a system in place and duplicate it and let it grow without too many issues. I wanted to McDonaldize a law firm. And that's what I did. And I started it by, in 2017, February 2017, I quit my job. I got that post on my Instagram for the day I quit my job. I have just some files in the trunk of my car. I said, hey, I'm out here. Let's do it. You know, within a couple of months, I found an office space. I was sharing the office space and only paying $120 a month in rent. So I kept my costs really low. By the time I made my first $1 million in my law firm, I was still only paying $300 a month in rent living with a roommate. So I was so like into scarcity mode. I was afraid to grow. I was afraid to start letting go of that dollar to get back to, you know? But the moment I started traveling and my business still worked, the moment I realized I could leave the office for a week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, come back and have checks on my desk, I realized this is a business that I could absolutely scale. I took care of the money situation early on and said, look, as soon as I start making some money, I'm going to take my parents on their first international vacation, take them on that pilgrimage to Mecca, which I did, bought my mom a brand new car and did like all the things that a good son should do. So I'm like, all right, now I'm good. I can focus on my thing.
I've paid my debts to society and my parents for whooping my ass for 40 cents. Exactly. So here you go. Here's all the good shit.
And so that's what I like about this, about being an attorney is the lifestyle that comes with it. You know, I was on the phone at 11 p.m. last night after I took care of that $7,000 issue. That's just, I'm just going to write it off, just pay it, cough it up to the game. But after that, I had a client reach out to me. I'm like, yo, I'm hungry. So I went with my wife. We're in our PJs, literally drove out because we were craving steaks. I'm like, well, this is the life of an entrepreneur. I'm going to drive out to Longhorn and pick up some steaks, drive back. A lead came in at 9 p.m. And I'm like, you know what? I'm going to call this person. I called her, find her up. And it's like, that's just what I'm going to do. Like, I still have hunger in me. I'm still going to do whatever it takes, but it comes with a lifestyle. And I think you can really find your passion when you see yourself doing something 5, 10, 15 years from now and saying, I'll still be happy doing that because it means something and I can give my family my time and my energy even moving forward. So
with that said, what are your long-term goals for your company or companies, right? You've got your media company. You've got, obviously, your injury attorney. You're an injury attorney. You've got your company. I don't know if you have attorneys underneath you helping you do some of the cases, but is that your long-term goal, is to be able to step back and, you know, have that in every single state? Or, you know, what's the big vision?
So I think people that have a massive vision I think it's a great idea, but you have to be stubborn about your goals, but easygoing with how you get there, right? Mm. I want to make a $1 billion brand. And if that happens to be my law firm, so be it. If that happens to be my media company, so be it. My real estate empire, so be it. I think you can never learn too much. Mm-hmm. There's always education out there that you can take and you can either disperse it and get paid to share that information, or you can use it within your own company or to pursue other business ventures. My ultimate goal, to be honest with you, I want to build the first Muslim hospital in Atlanta. And I want to, even if it doesn't matter what it costs, you're going to need money and I'm good at making money. That's what I want to do. I want to build a hospital, an organization where anyone that needs medical care can come in and get it for free if you need it. And I know that there's enough money in this system. I know how much these hospitals are making, how much these health companies are making, and I know especially how much car insurance companies are making. So there's money there. I'm just going to spread around the wealth a little bit, you know, and do something that's going to leave an impact and a legacy for myself and for my family for generations. That's what I want to do. Yeah. I attached a $1 billion number to it. Hey, if I can achieve it with $800 million, I guess that's fine. But that's just the number that I attach to it. And the number for the longest time used to be $100 million. And now that I'm creeping up on an 8-figure company, I realized, man, that might have been too small of a goal.
Yeah.
$100 million, I just want it to be $1 billion. And then
probably was a great goal when you initially thought of it.
Right.
Based upon where you were.
Right.
Right. What's weird is as we evolve and we start, you know, I remember saying, man, I'll be so rich if I make $100,000 a year.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know, when I was a kid, I'm like, man, I could live in this mansion. I could have this. And then I make $100,000 and I'm like, I look around, I'm like, this is what it feels like and this is what it looks like. I need 200, then 300, then 400. And then and you look around and it's like, even $400,000 a year, it's not crazy life-changing, altering money to where you can impact a lot of people. Maybe it can impact you and it buys you a little bit of freedom, but the reality is money just in of itself is pretty hollow. When you start tying it to purpose, like a hospital and giving back and that, then it gives the money more purpose.
Yes.
When you show up on a day-to-day basis, because man, it's as we evolve and get to new income levels without having a purpose, it just, you almost get more depressed because it's like, well, this is what it feels. All I've been doing this whole time is chasing money.
Yeah.
And then as you start getting money, you realize that money doesn't, that's not the happy side of, you know, I have a decent bank account, but I can sit there and still be miserable with a decent bank account. It's finding a way to give back to other people and impact other people. That's really what fills up your soul.
You gotta have something bigger than you.
Exactly. That drives you, money fills up the bank account, but impact fills up the soul. And if you can find something that gives you purpose and creates income, that's when you're going to feel at most whole as an individual and as a human being. And I think it's incredibly awesome that one of your biggest goals is to give something to other people. It's not to go have a beach house in Costa Rica, you know?
Well, there's two reasons for it. And sometimes our selflessness is an act of selfishness.
I think so too, because I get more giving than, you know, it's.
So exactly. I will tell you that I feel like Muslims in the United States have, and honestly all over the world, don't have a really good reputation, especially in the media. And I drive around Atlanta and see St. Joseph's Hospital and these Catholic hospitals, and I realize that these are actually, you know, Christian or Catholic funded organizations.
Yeah.
And even if it's just subliminal, the association of something positive and good with a religious identity and organization. And I feel like I could be the one that can do that for Muslims. I always say Islam is perfect, Muslims are not. Religions can be perfect if you interpret them the right way, you know, but people interpret them the wrong way. And that's how people start killing each other and going crazy and just using the word of the Lord against you, you know? I also, the selfish part of it is, man, like we just look really bad. And most Muslims don't have a good reputation, especially if they come out. I mean, for the amount of Muslims that are in the United States and the amount of representation that we actually have, it's a very small number. And I didn't want to turn this into a religious argument.
I love it.
I know I can do something that both makes Muslims look good and provides value for everyone, Muslims and non-Muslims alike. And that's what that would mean a lot to me. And I wanted to flip the script on you. So before you started your business and before you started seeing six figures and seven figures in your accounts, would you still say that the most important thing is to find passion, or is it to chase that dollar?
When you're young, you're chasing money. As you start getting older, like I said, you realize that money itself is very hollow. You know, I like you said, like when I give to people, when you give somebody a gift, you're excited to watch them open it up because you want to watch them beam and feel special, feel appreciated. And it's like you're more excited about giving. And when I get a gift, I'm not good at receiving gifts. I don't know how to act. I open it, I'm like, oh, thank you. Like, I feel in a weird way.
I'm the giver. Why are you giving me?
Yeah, exactly. It's like, I don't need anything. You know, I feel like I'm good. Like I want to be the person in a situation where I'm giving to somebody else because that makes me feel better than ever receiving anything. And so, like, there's people that you know, struggle with health, and you know, I'll go up and say, hey man, let's work out together. And I enjoy watching people evolve. I enjoy, you know, I walk around our office with 40-something employees and shake hands, and I love watching them succeed and level up and grow. And that's really given us a whole different mm-hmm. sense of purpose and passion in terms of, you know, like we talked about the Workout Wednesday thing, you know, when we were chatting back and forth on Instagram, you know, trying to incentivize people to do the right thing, to be yeah. healthy for themselves. And, you know, we've recently talked about putting a library in our office to where we pay people to start reading. You know, reading books, and then they have to come talk to us about the book and what they learned from it, because at least in that situation, we can literally watch people grow right before our eyes mm-hmm. and give them the power of information and knowledge. You know, that's giving will always be at the top of my list at this point.
At you this know, from point, my I agree forward. With you yeah. completely, and yeah. you have to have that caveat in there at this point. The yep. truth is, you can't pour from an empty cup.
Exactly.
You have to be selfish in the beginning. You have to take
care of yourself. You do,
man. You know, you
can't That's what I was going to say.
You can't be the one giving everything that you have and not being able to take care of yourself first. And
yeah. Well, the more you take care of yourself in the beginning, the more you can give to others later.
Exactly. And I think that's just one thing that I want to stress on is for anyone that's watching this show or listening to the podcast, if you are operating a 7 or 8 figure company, then a lot of the stuff that we discussed today is going to resonate with you. But if you're just in the very beginning, I don't think you should focus exclusively on passion, because passion doesn't pay the bills. Especially other people's opinions. I was just at the bank last week, and I tried to deposit this whole bag of other people's opinions, and for some reason they wouldn't take it.
Yeah.
I realized I got to focus on me first. And mm-hmm. I think there's nothing wrong with chasing the money in the beginning.
Yeah.
Nothing wrong.
Well, that's the vehicle. That's the vehicle. Yeah. You know, chase the money, do whatever you need to do to put yourself in a good situation. That's the vehicle to get you to the point to where you can then give. Yeah. Right? And exactly.
I just caught myself in a conversation the other day. I was like, man, if I could do it all over again, what I know now, I'd go back. I'd work on all of our fulfillment to service clients better because of this and that. And I know it's now my passion. And then I was like, you know what, dude? I wouldn't go back and change anything yeah. because all that stuff that I did when I was just chasing the money and grabbing the cash and hoping for the best. I mean, dude, that's honestly what got me to the point where I was like, all right, I'm not really fully fulfilled, even though I'm grabbing all this money up. I need to start investing into me and start discovering, like, what am I passionate about? It got me to that point, you know, but I would have never learned all that if I didn't go through that phase of, like,
you have to experience it. You got to
just hustling and grabbing the cash and being selfish, you know,
make some mistakes, man. You got to buy some things that make absolutely no sense. You have to make some financial mistakes. You have to go through it. You have to risk your credit. You have to learn things the hard way. That's, you know, they say experience is the worst teacher because it gives you the exam before the lesson. But I would say fail early, fail often, and jump back up. You know, and I think sometimes if you figure out early on what you're doing is not the business you want to be doing for the rest of your life, or it's something, walk away, man. It's okay to quit, you know?
Yeah.
People don't say that. People don't tell you that it's okay to quit. People also don't tell you that it's okay to be selfish.
It's not okay to quit just because it's hard.
Exactly.
Because hard is good. Exactly. You know, so some people, you know, don't misconstrue what he's trying to say here. He's basically just stating, like,
if your heart's not in it,
you know, all of that stuff, then you can walk away. But, you know, there's many times where it will be difficult. You will fail. You will fall on your face. All of those things, I believe, are just redirecting you, right? So if you fall on your face, somebody's like, man, maybe it's not for me. No, it's not for you. Just you were going down this path and you failed. So it's just trying to push you down this way. Just keep your eyes peeled. Take a step back from the problem or the struggle and try to analyze what it's trying to tell you, because it is trying to tell you something, right? And then just listen to it. And like you said, just navigate those waters. And if there's a roadblock here, kind of go this way then. And then if it's, you know, and so I just think people give up too easily, like we talked about, or want to monetize too easily. I'll see a new Instagram, and within 2 weeks of them posting on Instagram, they're already throwing offers out. It's like, you haven't even given enough value to even ask for anything in return yet.
Well, that's why most lawyers are failing at this social media game. Mm-hmm. We want to drop some, you know, knowledge bombs here. Most lawyers, and I can speak about other professionals too, because it applies in all professional industries, but I would say most lawyers fail at Instagram and Facebook because they treat it as an advertising platform.
Totally.
Exactly.
People don't go on Facebook to see ads. You know, people go on Facebook, number one, to be entertained, and number two, to be educated or informed. And if you can figure out a way to entertain and educate at the same time, then guess what? People actually listen to you. And then when people listen to you, you have their attention. And when you have their attention, you're on top of mind. When you're on top of mind, you get the client. So there's a process to that, and you kind of jump. If you want to jump over all of this and go straight to acquiring the client, you're going to spend a lot of money. Because Facebook also is incentivized, and Instagram, obviously, because it's owned by Facebook, they're incentivized to keep people on these platforms. And if all you're doing is just throwing out offers and ads and getting people to hire you, it doesn't really work, because people are going to be bouncing off immediately. When someone, the moment someone feels like it's, I always say, man, if it looks like an ad and it smells like an ad, it's probably a piece of shit. So I don't try to advertise on my social media. In fact, I get complimented on the ads because I promote them and spend money on them, because I always give value first. Hey, here are three things you should do when you're involved in a car wreck. Here's how you should negotiate. Don't ever accept the first offer. Make sure if you're dealing with this insurance company, you find out exactly how much insurance coverage is available. Make sure to get MRIs, because that's the most valuable thing that you can do for your case. And I spend money on educating people. And so it makes the client acquisition process much easier. So if people are watching my CEO lawyer brand on Instagram and the direction that I'm taking it, just know that everything I'm doing is for a reason. And I don't create ads because I don't think they work as well. It's very expensive. I would rather get people to want to watch my content so that Facebook naturally wants to make my reach even larger, because the more people stay on my page, the more they can run ads to those people. And so when you start putting money into it, that cost per client and that cost per view drops down significantly. And so that's really what it is, man. You got to test out content. You have to figure out what works best, and stuff that works, keep posting more of it.
Well, usually you'll find out what doesn't work first.
Right.
So, you know, spinning your wheels, spending money, and you're like, damn, this thing don't work. No, you can't say that, because there's many people on Facebook or on Instagram making plenty of money. You know, and some of the guys at the top, whether it's, you know, Andy, Ed, Gary Vee, they're not talking about, he's not talking about VaynerMedia, he's not talking about First Form, he's not talking about WFG. They're just giving genuinely, and people ultimately want to support that individual. You know, it's crazy, because we did a podcast, and at the end of the podcast, we did like a $1,000 tax plan offer, and somebody else that listens to us has a sister that's a doctor. So he then goes to his sister and says, hey, I want you to reach out to these guys. Yeah. And it's the same concept with you. The person that you're educating might not even be your customer, but they might know somebody eventually that gets in an accident and then says, hey, you've got to use my dude.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? So
build
it's like,
fans, build a loyal following, man. You can do that. Mm-hmm. While it's still free.
Yeah, exactly.
Do it, you know?
It's crazy. A lot of people don't understand that, man, but and it's something we've had to learn the hard way too, dude. But it's great that you brought that up. I loved how you flipped it on us too with the passion. And dude, I just think people should definitely follow you, bro. Like, I follow your content. I love it.
I appreciate it.
I learn stuff from it, you know? And so, but dude, honestly, what I really learned from you, dude, is like, you're not afraid to put yourself out there. Yeah. You are a true hustler. Yeah. You genuinely care about people. And there's a lot to learn just from watching you, whether you need a personal injury attorney or not, you know? So tell our people, man, how to find you.
Yeah.
Oh, I appreciate that, man. Thank you. You can follow me on all my social media channels at CEO Lawyer. I picked out CEO Lawyer because I'm a boss and I'm a lawyer. So my Instagram page is popping, but I also have content on Facebook, LinkedIn, Snapchat, Twitter. I don't use all of the platforms religiously. I kind of just go where, you know, where people are most excited. And right now I'm starting to create a lot more content for TikTok. It's not, you know, legal advice, and you know, it's not serious at all. And I think TikTok is going to change over time, where, you know, like Instagram started with just like pictures of puppies and cupcakes, eventually becoming a legitimate business platform. What won't change, though, I think, is Google and YouTube, because those are search engines. And people are going to YouTube to search specifically for something that they want to be informed about. All these other social media platforms are going to come and go. You know, TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn, they're going to have their attention spans. You know, Snapchat is almost dead now, but I still put on there because I have people on there.
I was actually going to ask you about what you thought about future platforms and TikTok. Because, dude, I mean, we created one. We haven't done much with it yet, but I've also seen a lot of influencers going there. So it's like,
My daughter laughed at me, dude. When I took her to breakfast the other morning, I opened my phone. She's like, you have TikTok? She started laughing. She's like, that's for kids.
And, dude.
And it's so was Instagram now. At one point.
It's for kids now. But guess what? Kids grow up.
Exactly.
And so was Instagram. And so was Facebook. And,
You have an opportunity to get that attention now while it's still early and cheap. Honestly, I kind of kicking myself in the butt for not spending more time on TikTok 6 months ago because I had one video that got 200,000 views on TikTok and I never get that on my Instagram. Even though they calculate views differently, that's another story. But I think you should just be silly with TikTok, you know, and maybe make funny videos. I think you should have some fun with it, man. I mean, Andy was saying the other day, like, I like TikTok because it's fun. And TikTok is fun, but it's not a serious platform yet, but attention is serious.
Yeah. It seems like people only want to go somewhere where they can turn a buck. You know what I mean? And it's just getting in early, just like any other thing. The earlier that you get in, the better off you're going to be 2 years down the road or 3 years. Don't wait until, because if the attention goes there, that's where the money's going to ultimately go. The corporations or anybody that's trying to get in front of mass amounts of people, the money will be there. So if mass amounts of people are on TikTok, whether it doesn't matter what their age is right now, but in 2, 3, 4 years, when these 17-year-olds are now 20 years old or 21 years old, starting to hustle and starting to get in business or whatever it is, you've already got all their attention.
Well, let's be real, dude. TikTok acquired Musical.ly for a reason. They have a plan.
Facebook could not acquire TikTok for a reason.
Yeah, exactly.
That's why his folks is so mad. You know, he's talking shit about TikTok. It's because they're taking away some of your attention, bro. And I'll tell you why TikTok is a crazy platform. I think it's the only social media platform that allows you to save a video onto your camera roll and then share it with someone outside of TikTok. If you really think about it, if you see a video on Instagram, you have to share it with someone on Instagram. If you have a video on Facebook, you can't download that video unless you do like the screen share thing with your iPhone or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
That doesn't come out to be great quality. TikTok allows you to share that content. They do something very smart. They let you save the video, but they keep the little TikTok thing bouncing, you know, on the
corner. On the corner.
Exactly.
Yeah.
They're advertising without people even knowing they're advertising.
It's going to be huge, man. I was telling my video team, like, look, we got to start creating 2 new pieces of content for TikTok every single day. I've been slacking because I still have a law firm to run, but I don't want to look at this next year in 2020 and be like, dang, man, I could have had 100,000 followers on TikTok that became real clients. And I will tell you, I've already gotten clients that found me on TikTok, messaged me on Instagram, and hired me that way. They just
it's already working.
An update where you can actually, this was just a few days ago, where you can link your Instagram and your YouTube channel to your TikTok page. So they're honestly, what they're doing now is they're just saying, look, we're just going to go for it and give people everything that they want in a social media platform that they otherwise could not get.
Yeah.
Instagram is taking away likes. Freaking TikTok, it's all about likes. You know, it's all about views. It's all about funny content. So
let me ask you real quick. You have your own podcast, just so if there's any listeners that want to check you out there as well. What, I think you have a podcast, don't
you? Yes, I have the CEO Lawyer podcast.
Okay, so everything's basically branded as CEO Lawyer.
Right.
And I just so if they want to find you on Facebook, Insta. Okay, cool.
Got a little trademark from the USPTO. Pretty cool.
Nice.
We'll get there. We'll get to the Ollie Awad level one of these days, dude.
Fun, we need a trick.
You know, you got to hook it up, man. Guys, I know you enjoyed the episode. Ollie, we appreciate you coming on. Make sure that you like, subscribe, and leave a review after you listen to the podcast. Share it with a family or friend. And make sure you check out CEO Lawyer because he's the real deal. Appreciate you, brother.
Thank you, my man. Thank you, guys.
Thank you,
dude. Take care.